Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society on this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. We welcome you. No matter where you are on this journey of life, call it your spiritual journey if you want to, but no matter where you are, we welcome you. No matter your sexual preference, your gender, color of your hair, eyes, your abilities or disabilities, you are welcome here. If this is one of your first times, or even if you're just visiting us and you want to visit us again, we urge you to do that because our services are different on Sunday mornings. Sometimes I do them. I am Sandy Ingham, Prairie's part-time consulting minister. Sometimes people from outside this congregation do the service, and sometimes people from within the congregation do the service. We will also have a time later on in the service where, if you are visiting, you may introduce yourself if you so choose, of course. We try not to force you to do that. The opening words are these, titled Gratitude, written by Max Kapp. Often I have felt that I must praise my world for what my eyes have seen these many years and what my heart has loved. And often I have tried to start my lines, Dear Earth, I say, and then I pause to look once more. Soon I am bemused and far away in wonder. So I never get beyond Dear Earth. Mary, would you light the chalice, please?
Thank you.
For daylight and darkness, for sunshine and rain, for the earth and all people, we offer deep thanksgiving. We kindle this light in celebration of the life that we share. Pop's Prayer, a reading by Unitarian Universalist minister Robert Walsh. He writes, My earliest memory of a prayer is the table grace my grandfather used to say. I associate it with holiday meals, with extended family crowded around a long dining room table. I remember the smell of turkey gravy, the sight of bowed heads, and then the gruff voice of this old man delivering the prayer as if it were one long word accented on the first and last syllables. See if I can do this. Lord, make us thankful for these provisions within Christ's name. Amen. The last word sounded like Gamen. I thought that was the way one ended a prayer. I remember years when I had no idea what he was saying. The prayer had meaning that did not depend on knowing. It was an invocation for the larger liturgy of the meal. Its meanings beyond language had to do with bonds. My bonds to the food, my parents and sister, the aunts and uncles and cousins and grandparents there, the warmth of the room, the celestial and human rhythms that brought us to that table, and other mysteries beyond these. There came a time when I figured out the words to Pop's Prayer, but that did not seem to affect its meaning. It was much, much later, after turning this memory over until it was worn smooth, that I realized something important about the prayer. I had thought it was a prayer of thanksgiving, but Pop did not say, Lord, thank you. He said, Lord, make us thankful. It was a prayer of petition. We were beginning those special meals not with thanks for the bountiful gifts before us and around us, but with a confession that we were not thankful enough. Make us thankful. Wake us up. Our gratitude is dulled by the very abundance of what we have. Bring us somehow to enough clarity of vision to see what a miracle it is, creation, this creation in which we find ourselves. In truth, we are not thankful enough. A confession with which to begin, our thanksgiving. Amen. And this from another Unitarian Universalist minister, Kathleen McTeague. She writes, this is David Blanchard's, whom Barbara Chatterton always, yes, we have to give a call out to David Blanchard. We've all been to someone's house where saying grace is a mandatory practice before the meal. It's not always a comfortable moment. And not because it's a grace, but because it's a mandatory experience. Blanchard writes, in my experience, it seems these mandatory graces are divided into a couple of categories. The first is the sectarian blessing. For example, this one might be addressed to the "in your faith here," he puts. God, to make the meal suitable and sustaining to the "your faith here" people around the table. These blessings make me nervous. The second category is the speed reading blessing, spoken so quickly that you have no clue what was said. These make me dizzy. And then there are those occasions where the host or hostess can't resist asking me, a minister, to offer a professional prayer over the pot roast or whatever. These usually make me feel inept. If there is ever a time of year when dining rooms all over America set a place at the table for religion, it's at Thanksgiving. As anachronistic as it may feel, some sort of prayer can be a meaningful ritual by which we might acknowledge the blessings of human companionship and love, the sustenance and strength derived from the earth, and the magic and mystery of our relationship to creation. It's big stuff. It's there without our having created it or without our having invoked it. It's sitting right there beside us. It seems at the very least that we might give a nod in its direction and recognize all we have been given, unbidden. My Thanksgiving blessing is already figured out. It'll be the same one my family uses every time we sit at the table together, but it's not a prayer I lead. I have a young zealot that set our tradition in place. When she was 3, my daughter Emily must have been to a friend's house where they said a prayer before eating. She returned home, took our hands, and said, "Praise! Praise!" So that is what we started to do. We share some part of our day that we were thankful for. It's rarely profound and occasionally silly, but we do it anyway. Being reminded, even on a bad day, that there is much to praise, I recommend it. Emily recommends it. Let us praise. It is difficult, at least for me, to talk about giving thanks and being grateful and expressing gratitude this time of the year, or any time of the year, without using language, words that not all Unitarian Universalists are completely comfortable with. Praise, grace, blessing, prayer, blessed. Good Unitarian Universalist humanist that I am, I went through a period of time when I rejected certain faith-related or supposed religious words, but I got over that. Many words are just too good to give away to any one particular faith tradition. There's another difficulty that I often encounter when trying to talk about cultivating an attitude of gratitude. A phrase that I'm very fond of, but I'm afraid it's becoming perhaps overused. And like so many very good turns of phrase, attitude of gratitude, once overused, can then turn into a cliche, thus losing its power or its impact, its intent. Sometimes cliches then become schmaltzy, sickeningly sweet. And again, the words can lose their meaning, their ability to influence how we live our daily lives. Language is fascinating, isn't it? Ever evolving human creation that sometimes gets us in a lot of trouble. Unitarian Universalist Minister Derek Jackson wrote this in a recent Ministers Association newsletter column. Despite my discomfort with the myth behind the American Thanksgiving holiday, I do believe that making time for gratitude is important, and that we should do this on an ongoing basis, not just once a year. Gratitude helps us be aware of what is going on in us and around us. It strengthens relationships, illuminating the interconnected web of all existence. Studies have shown that practicing gratitude improves physical, mental, and emotional health. And I would add spiritual health to that list as well, writes Jackson. I am aware, he says, that although I experience gratitude often, I don't always take the time to name it and express it. For me, that means naming my gratitude in the moment and saying thank you, and to send notes of appreciation, even for things that happened long ago. As a procrastinator, I personally like that line. We never know if that person might need our appreciation at that moment. So what I would like you to try to do during the next few minutes is just listen to certain words as if you were learning or hearing them for the first time. I know that that can be very difficult, but try. Put yourself into a place of innocence about Thanksgiving, small letter T as well as capital letter T. There are various ways to express gratitude, to give thanks, to be thankful, to embody that attitude of gratitude. David Blanchard, in that reading I just did, said uses the word praise to express gratitude. Robert Walsh liked the word prayer. I don't know whether or not these two men would describe themselves as Christian Unitarian Universalist ministers, but I do know that they don't have any problems using language that is more commonly thought to belong to other faith traditions rather than to Unitarian Universalists. Unitarian Universalist minister Kathleen McTeague finds that the word grace is important for her when giving thanks. In a reading of hers that you'll hear in just a few minutes, she is specifically talking about grace before meal, but I think she's also implying that, as one of my favorite bumper stickers puts it, grace happens. When I was thinking about what I wanted to say this morning about giving thanks, that word grace kept popping into my head, and so you know I like to scurry off to the dictionary when this happens. So first thing I looked up was gratitude. Oh, dictionaries. Gratitude, the state of being grateful. You know, it can go around in loops when you get into linguistics. And thankfulness. But grace, the word grace, is linked to the same roots of words that mean to be grateful or thanks as Sanskrit. A couple of Sanskrit words, which really surprised me, particularly the phrase he praises, which of course I would have to amend to she and he praise, or we all praise. But grace is an elusive word. It's not really tied into any specific religion or belief system. The third definition of grace in a very, very long column about grace in the dictionary is this: disposition to kindness, favor, clemency, or compassion. Benign good will. Now, this is a definition of grace I can definitely live with, and this is what I mean when I use that word. You might think, the first thing you might think of is grace as a blessing, a short prayer before partaking of a meal. That's too specific and it's too limited. For me, there are two pillars upon which to build an attitude of gratitude. One is to try to be a non-anxious presence. And the other is storytelling. Telling our stories, yes, but listening carefully to the stories of others. Being a non-anxious presence involves being in the moment. And as many of you know, it's central to the Buddhist tradition. It's not unique to the Buddhist tradition, but being in the moment, there's sometimes a lot of fun made of the phrase, be here now. But take that apart. Be. Just take time to be, to breathe, to be quiet, to not be so busy. Great thing to say, isn't it, after Black Friday, which, no, I do not partake of. Here, wherever you are, be here. Don't be out there thinking about what you're going to buy for lunch or for Aunt Susie or whatever. Be here now. Be in the present. Classic Buddhism. A sidebar, if you read your December newsletter, and of course you all read your newsletters, right? Faithfully. Mm-hmm. I think my column will be about trying to be a non-anxious presence. I am so, so grateful for the many, many people who have come into my life, however briefly. So many individuals have encouraged me, often unknowingly, to expand my horizons, to engage in a never-ending quest to broaden the circle of humanity, to recognize all of life, and to love all of it. Maybe being thankful is better than being angry. I heard that quote a couple days ago from John Rutter, American composer. Often music helps me understand gratitude, and often that music arrives in the form of one of our hymns. The third verse of the first hymn that we sang this morning goes like this. We sing of the prophets, the teachers, the dreamers, designers, creators, and seers, our own lives expanding, our gratitude commanding, their deeds have made immortal, their days and their years. That is what I mean when I express my gratitude for all those countless people, often nameless people, multitudes of people who have shaped my beliefs and expanded my knowledge of the world because of storytelling. Another way to describe this is to say that I am grateful for all the unlearning I have done and am still doing. Here's an example. Am I the only one in this room who played cowboys and Indians when they were growing up? I didn't think so. I should be embarrassed. I would be embarrassed to admit to this, except, come on, what did I know? I was 6 or 7, maybe 8. And I had cowboy boots from about age 4, I think. And of course, nobody wanted to be the Indians. They all wanted to be the cowboys. I can't name any one person who disabused me, except probably my mother, of this whole cowboy and Indian saga as I originally learned it, yet there were countless people who pointed me in a more honest direction. Sunday school teachers, that's what we called them in Presbyterian life. Wonderful public school history teachers all through junior and senior high schools, and I went on to major in history. The same thing was true of my eventually grasping, probably just a tiny bit, what it might be like for LGBTQ people in this society. My knowledge was increased, my vision of the interdependent web expanded thanks to the many wonderful people I have known over the years who coincidentally happen to be gay or lesbian or transgender. It's always that danger of saying, well, some of my best friends are gay. As actually, some of them are, but I don't want to put it that way. And racism, oh boy, so many people have taught me so much. When I was in seminary at Star King School for the Ministry in Berkeley, my first semester, I was in the laundry room of a graduate student apartment building, and there was only one other person in there. His name was Samuel, and Samuel happened to be black from South Africa, big guy. And he didn't have any laundry detergent. So I, gave him some, right? And it was his first semester also. And we started comparing classes we were taking. And he had to, later that week, give, I think you could maybe call it a biographical sketch of his life, and why he was wanting to go into ministry. And I don't know what prompted this, but he said he was very nervous about that. And of course, that's understandable. Well, it turned out that he had been a prisoner. He had been imprisoned at the same time Mandela was, through a lot of that period of apartheid in South Africa. And then he whipped off his shirt and he turned around and he showed me the scars. Not sure I actually grasped or believed a lot of what I knew intellectually about apartheid. Thank you, Samuel. And then there was, on a more happy note, just 2 years ago maybe, I was on an airplane crossing the Atlantic and saw lots of time, that's the point, on the airplane. And a young man had taken the seat beside me, and he was from Libya. And he was 19. And he was coming to this country. He was, I'm sure, from a wealthy family. And his brother was already here, so he was joining someone. But he was going to go to school here, and he was so excited about coming to the land of the free. I will say that this was before November of 2016. I don't know if he'd feel that way now. Sometimes our learning, or rather unlearning, takes place through reading about other people's lives. This is the infomercial part. Every year, most of you, I think, know what Guest at Your Table is. I don't want to take too much time right now to go into that. But as I say, every year, this is the best use of your money that you give to so-called good causes that you will find anywhere. It's a program run by the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. It's about 70 years old now, maybe? Not the guest part isn't, but the UUSC is. And every year we get brochures that tell some stories, four stories usually. And this year the theme, so to speak, is about immigration. So please, if you haven't already taken a brochure, please get one and take it home and look at the stories. And if you put money in this at every meal, you'd be amazed at how it will add up. I did this with my kids when they were in Unitarian Universalist Religious Education at First Unitarian here in Madison. But of course, you don't have to fill this with coins. It might be easier for us if you just wrote a check. But at any rate, it is a really good program. And I give thanks for the stories that I have learned about in these brochures. I know you all think, I suspect you all think, you know a lot about immigration and the awful things that are happening. Read these stories. And then, I don't know, put money in the box. I give thanks during this Thanksgiving season for all those encounters with people whose presence, whose being, whose existence has touched my beingness and expanded my store of gratitude, of gratefulness for life. Apparently, Pilgrim Edward Winslow, writes Jane Zepka, wrote the only eyewitness description of the first Thanksgiving. In his brief letter to a friend in England, Winslow described the joy, the celebration, and the carousing that followed the harvest of 1621. That first to-do seems to have been like harvest home back in England. In the words of Pilgrim Winslow, cakes and ale and hang the cost. Pilgrim Winslow makes no mention of thanks. Uh-oh, Zepka writes. We find out that the religious component of Thanksgiving and even the act of giving thanks are later additions. Isn't that just the way? At any given time, we're busy with our cakes and ale and turkey feathers. It's only later, looking back, that we understand the gravity of our harsh winters, the fragility of daily life, the preciousness of hopes for years to come. We get through it, we celebrate, and then finally, the Thanksgiving comes. Kathleen McTeague writes, "Wise women and men from every tradition teach that gratitude is at the heart of the spiritual life because it leads us to all the rest. Consider the simplest practice of gratitude, saying grace before we eat a meal. That little moment of attention is enough to wake us up to the world. Instead of chugging a glass of water down our thirsty throats, gratitude reminds us how lucky we are that clean water flows for us with a simple turn of the handle at a sink. Instead of packing in our food so we can get on to the next activity, or eating so distractedly that we barely taste it, that moment of saying grace helps us look at the meal with a kind of reverence. We pause and remember not everyone gets to eat. Not even everyone in our country, in our city, gets to eat. Where did it all come from? This food, this water, none of it spontaneously generated there on the plate or in the glass, so we remember the rain and soil and sun on which everything depends. We remember the invisible makers of this meal, the people who bend over the fields for hours planting or harvesting, the ones in the barns or slaughterhouses, the ones who work in factories or who drive the trucks or ring up the cash registers. Even a fleeting prayer of thankfulness for our daily bread reminds us of how fragile and dependent our bodies are, how everything hinges on everything else, and awakens us again to the fundamental grace of breath, water, food. Thank you, writes Richard Gilbert, to what or whom I address the words, I do not know. I only know I must speak them. If no one hears, no matter. I need to hear them for myself. Bubbling up from some hidden well within, they come unbidden. Blessings have come to me beyond my deserving. This I know. To be sure, there are always moments of pain. There are times I curse my fate and condemn my lot. Life from time to time is unfair. My burdens often seem to outweigh my blessings. All this I know. Still, there is always the gift of life. Always there is beauty and joy and meaning glimmering beneath the blanket of depression and despair. Always there are those who lift me. Always there are lessons to be learned. Always I would rather be than not. Thank you. So how do you express gratitude? More importantly, how do you live it, embody it, use it as one of the most important tools in your how to get through life toolbox? How do you use gratitude this time of the year in the dark, dark times? Well, of course, I don't mean just the literal dark season, but your own dark times. How does gratitude help you, or does it? If you look at that quote at the top of your order of service, it says anyone can be happy when they get what they want. The challenge is to stay grateful and peaceful, even when the world around you feels crazy and dangerous and horrible. And I also hope that Unitarian Universalism might help you get through the dark times, but we've been accused more than once of being wishy-washy and too optimistic, that we don't know how to get through dark times because our faith doesn't give us that. I don't agree with that, but it has been said. Closing words are titled Thanksgiving Benediction, another writing by Kathleen McTeague. What questions do you think you need answered in order to wake to the morning and step into your life with joy? Listen, the dark branches scrolled sharp against a pure sky are the only map you will ever receive. When you look at those lines, When you attend to them until you feel yourself lifted by their dark runes into the clear winter sun or the dimming light of evening, there is your guide. When gratitude rises as the only prayer of your heart, you are learning at last what it is to be fully alive. May it be so. Go in peace. Greet your neighbor. Enjoy the rest of the holiday weekend.